Okay. A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So first of all, today is Vesak Day. I'd like to once again wish all Kayamita a happy and blessed Vesak, so that you all can continue to progress along the path of Dhamma. And may the blessing of the Triple Gem be always with you. And the great significance of Vesak, after listening to the video sharing that I had delivered, I think it was released yesterday by SJVA, you would have much better understanding of the significance of Vesak, the triple auspicious event that marks the Buddha's birth, the birth of the great being, Sammasambuddha, the fully enlightened one. Then his enlightenment that brings forth the teaching to the world. And this teaching is delivered to mankind, humanity, free. This is the only free lunch. Then the advice of the Buddha before he passed away, the Parinibbana. His message is just strive on with heedfulness. Or in Pali, he told the monk, Apamadena Sampadena. Apamadena Sampadena. May strive on with heedfulness. As long as you can develop heedfulness, which carries two components. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful, then constantly meditating. You can do this, you are already destined for enlightenment. Because according to Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, it confirmed very clearly that you are destined for enlightenment. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. So remember that and train your mind diligently with the faith to establish yourself so that you are heedful throughout the day. Okay, now we will prepare for puja. Then after the puja, we will have our half an hour of meditation. So we have less sharing today. Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanda. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Gansin Pusa. Namo Gansin Pusa. Namo Gansin Pusa. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Amitofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Milofo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Tisang Wang Pusa. Namo Tisang Wang Pusa. Namo Tisang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa, Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipano Bhagavato Sakka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami. Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchati. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Musawada viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majapamadatana viramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect Tripajan. Buddhang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang pujayami. Okay, you can just relax yourself, body and mind, and we will get ready for meditation. Eh? We will have half an hour of meditation. I will set the alarm. Eh? So in half an hour's time, it will trigger off. Then I will ring the bell. Then you can mindfully, slowly come out of the meditation. Okay, I will set the alarm now. Always remember, just relax body and mind completely. Don't try to know. Then let the mundane mind settle down. Whatever thinking or whatever activity of mind, the thought process, let it arise. Let it settle down. Yeah. Then after that, you just maintain awareness and find out what is going on. So the awareness is to be realized. So once it settles down and the mundane mind stop thinking or the activity stop, your awareness is just aware, aware, aware. So just let it aware, finish, aware, finish. Like all the senses, especially tactile, wherever you can feel them, locate them, you just aware, finish. Or if you need the object of meditation to help you to anchor your mind, then go to it. This is just a skillful means to train your mind. So you just do it. Or you can apply the mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking, then maintain the anapanasati or whatever method and technique or skillful means that you have to develop the ability to be aware of it. Finish. So stabilize the awareness until it becomes very quiet, very still. But the most direct way is to develop the spiritual faculty so that the mental hindrance does not arise. Then straight away you can go into the meditative state. So if you have the ability, then you just relax and maintain awareness. The mind will settle down. You will go into the meditative state within minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, sometimes maybe 5 minutes. But if you are patient, even without the spiritual faculty, you can also do it. Just let the thinking slow down. You have to be patient to detect the slowing down. Your awareness will detect it. You will know. All of a sudden, you realize it becomes very quiet. When you don't try to know, don't try to do anything, it will become very quiet. Then you can see the sankhara activity slowing down. That time, you will be very assured. Your faith will become very strong. Yeah? You can really experience it settling down. Then all of a sudden, slow down until finally it ceases. Then you will understand what I mean. By realizing the true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind. So the mind that is without thought is your true mind, is your meditative mind. We call it the silent mind. And that is the one that can meditate. So realize that. Okay? So I'll off the light, then we can start the meditation. Okay.
Thank you.
For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Yeah? Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness that you have developed. These are the mind state that you have trained and developed. And you have to bring forth them into your daily life to stabilize your daily mindfulness. And the real meditation is the real the stability of daily mindfulness. Not until your daily mindfulness is developed, you cannot develop the true understanding. So all of formal meditation is to train the mind so that the mind enters deep. So that this clarity of mind state, inner peace leading to inner well-being, then inner awareness, the tranquility and stillness of mind, the silent mind that is just aware. You need to stabilize all this and develop the clear understanding. And this is the silent mind, the meditative mind that can meditate, that can develop the understanding and the awakening, that can insight into phenomena and see things as they are. This stability of mindfulness will make you very sensitive. It will enable you to see many things that you never see before. Because when you are in that state of sati or heedfulness, stability of it, you don't think like before. You are not heedless. You are hardly thinking. Most of the time you are just quiet and aware. That's why there is clarity. There is just an awareness within. And because you are aware, you are sensitive, you can see many things, you can understand many things. And when the nature awakens, you can develop the wisdom, which is different from Dhamma knowledge. It has nothing to do with the thought process. It is the nature that all of a sudden awakens. Or insight into phenomena and awaken to the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta. In English, it's translated as impermanence. The universal characteristics of impermanence, everything is dependent, originating, condition, arising. You will come to understand this. And without causes, without condition, nothing arises. But when causes and conditions arise, things arise, phenomena arise, phenomena manifest, and in accordance with the supporting condition, it continues to flow, exist, and move. But when the conditions is to be, it ceases to be, then you see very clearly the universal characteristic of impermanence, following nature's law that governs life and existence. And you wanting your way, which is not nature's way, suffering is the result. You will understand all this very clearly. Then, because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, grasp on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. You will understand. Then you will see clearly the anatta nature, means non-self nature, not real, not me, the empty nature existence. All this you will start to understand. So meditation is about developing this clear understanding. We call it the insight knowledges. Yeah. Especially the ability of the silent mind or the meditative mind to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature. And these three universal characteristics, they are common to all phenomena. Every phenomena in this universe, whether it is physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit this universal characteristic. And when you see them clearly, understand them deeply, then you will come to understand the deep meaning of anatta nature. Then your self-delusion will be rooted out. The moment you break free from anatta, you understand what anatta is, you will break free from the self-delusion, which the Buddha calls sakkayadity. Once you break that, you will realize enlightenment, at least the first stage of sainthood, sotapanna shape. That one very easy, relatively easy to realize. You only need a glimpse of cessation, nibbana. Then that change in consciousness lead to the change in lineage. Then that form of mind that goes through will understand. Then the first three fetters, they will be rooted or eradicated, especially the first, they call it the first fetters of sakkayadity, self-delusion. That one must break first, and then the other two will follow. Then the next two are the fetters that is the resultant of sakkayadity. Because of that, you will have faith in the Triple Gem, unshakable. So the faith in the Triple Gem is very beautiful. Then the third one is, you will not believe in all the rites and ritual. People cannot lie to you anymore. Or when people tell you after you die, you become one and one heart, then you straight away understand. These people don't understand what actually is this form of mind. And what that cessation is all about, that nature is all about. But the sotapanna, they will know the non-self nature, the empty nature of existence, anicchang dukkang anatta. That characteristic is very clear. And because of that, they will know very clearly this form of mind is not real, not him, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, grasp on to, and say, this is me, this is I. And then the four noble truth become very easy to understand, especially the first two noble truth. Noble truth of dukkha and the cause arising of dukkha. So all this becomes very clear. You know, when you start to understand the five aggregates of form and mind are impermanent, little suffering, and empty nature, not real, not you, then you are free. You are free. And because of that understanding, that wisdom, your wisdom will liberate your mind. So that sakkayadity, once severe, rooted out, you will not be afflicted by the attachment, craving or clinging due to self-delusion, suffering that arise from the upadana khandas, the grasping energy, there will be no more. Okay, so that is the summary of what you need to understand. Now we will continue from where we stopped. We are at lesson 10, page 60. So lesson 10, page 50. 1.1. Bratio's reminder on heedfulness. So, like I explained in the sharing last week, the importance of heedfulness, and is also part of the significance of Vesak, because before the Buddha's passing away, his parinibbana, he reminded the monks, do strive on with heedfulness. Apamadena sampadeta. And that advice is very important. That advice is born out of his wisdom, his understanding. If you don't strive on your heedfulness, you are heedless, then you are as if they, you don't stand a chance. That's why the spiritual practice or the cultivation is concerned. Enlightenment in the here and the now is beyond your reach if you are heedless. So this part, I will go through with you, then you will develop clear understanding. Gratitude reminded us not to be heedless anymore, but instead strive on with heedfulness and diligently making use of this great window of opportunity to cultivate and to gain liberation from birth and death. When the Buddha's asana or the Buddha's dispensation is still around. Yeah? Right now, we are very lucky. We are still within the dispensation of the Buddha, the era of Sakyamuni Buddha. The Dhamma will last for about 5,000 years, it seems. So now it's more than half, 2,600 years. Maybe in 2,400 years, it will be gone. But it was also mentioned because they emitted the Bhikkhuni order. So this sasana may be shortened by 500 years. So it could be 4,500 years, then the sasana is no more. So we cannot take for granted. So if it's 4,500 years, you have less than 1,000 years left. So even assuming that you have the good condition to continuously come back to take human birth, how many more human birth can you have? Then do you still have the condition to be born a human? And do you still have the condition to recall this teaching, this understanding? Unless you take the Bodhisattva vow that I have set out for you, you may not be able to. Then later on, when the sasana is no more, it's even more difficult unless you have the vow, the Bodhisattva vow, in honesty. So this part is very important. Then I read on. This is because according to the Buddha, it's very difficult to be born a human. And even more rare and difficult to be born during the era of the Buddha Sasana and to encounter the Buddha is Mandarin. So there is this saying in the Mahayana, is it? Tan sen nan de jing yi de. Fo fa nan wen jing yi wen. You have such good blessing, ability and condition to be born a human during the Buddha Sasana and to encounter the real Dhamma. Means you have great parami. You already have them. Then what are you waiting for? Why do you still want to let this golden window of opportunity slip by? That's the reason why I keep on reminding Kayana Mitta. This is the golden window of opportunity for cultivation. For all cultivators or Dhamma practitioners to awaken. Here during the Buddha Sasana, you have the affinity and condition. It's very easy to develop the enlightenment, the awakening. Relatively very easy. So do strive on your heedfulness and make full use of your good condition. So do follow the advice of the Buddha to strive on your heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. For this great window of opportunity is indeed very, very rare. So please do not be complacent to let it slip by or slip away. For you will never know when you will have this condition again. And here, what I have written is, don't be complacent to let it slip away. For you will truly regret how foolish you were if you will let it slip by. So it also such a great coincidence that today is Vesak Day and we are at lesson 10, which actually deal with this essential Dhamma about the advice of the Buddha, especially his advice before his parinibbana. Train your mind to be heedful, strive for the heedfulness. So this teaching is very relevant, very apt. And the condition is just beautiful. Maybe it's meant to be. The earlier Heart Sutta short notes that emphasize the following important basic essential teaching of the Buddha are more than enough to help you all develop cultivation. At that time, I already mentioned the sharing is enough, more than enough for you to develop the cultivation to awaken. So here is a recap. Importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculty. This one we already went through. The Buddha said in order to understand his spiritual teaching, you need to develop the five spiritual faculties. Yeah, these are spiritual faculties that can allow you to understand his spiritual teaching. The reason being, when you have these five spiritual faculties developed, the five spiritual faculties are Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. You have this developed, it will counter the opposite five, the mental hindrance. The mental hindrance are the five opposite mental states that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why when you have the hindrance, you cannot meditate, you cannot understand spiritual teaching. Where they hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness to receive the Dhamma, to receive the truth, to receive the spiritual teaching. So understand this clearly. See the importance of cultivating the five spiritual faculties and develop it. Because the advice of the Buddha, all his essential Dhamma, the teaching, every time you start a Dhamma class or an event or hold any Dhamma discussion or seminar or what, usually the Buddha would advise us to start with puja. Puja is devotional practice, devotional offerings. So when you develop this puja, you actually are cultivating the five spiritual faculties. Then you also develop the 10 meritorious action to complement your cultivation. So these five spiritual faculties to remind you of the triple gem. So the first one is the faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. So the first spiritual faculty is faith. So our devotional practice and puja, they all bring us back to the triple gem. That's why we make an offering to the triple gem. We pay respect to Lord Buddha. Then we take refuge. We chant the salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Then we renew our precepts. Then after that, we reflect on the significance of all the essential Dhamma items that we offer to the triple gem, like the flower, the clear water, the incense, fruits, and many other things. So all this has its significance, and it reminds us of the cultivation, the essential Dhamma. Then after that, we will also make aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this offering. Then we listen to Dhamma, we straighten our view, we meditate, we transfer merit, we share merits. Then we provide service to the Buddhist community and we help out in the various wholesome activities, especially on Vesak Day. Then apart from Vesak Day, you can do all this wholesomeness at whatever Buddhist activity that you are having, like our Tuesday class, Thursday class, Sunday class, monthly house dana sharing. And also we can also have our spiritual trip annual retreats and other things. All these are occasion for developing the training of the mind to develop the spiritual faculties. So sadhā, once it's developed, it will drive us to cultivate. And this devotional practice, the puja, covering all the activity of listening to the Dhamma, meditation, straightening of you, developing the 10 meritorious action, will give us the understanding. Then the faith will strengthen. Yeah, when we investigate into Dhamma, the Dhamma stand out the investigation, then the faith become very strong. So sadhā will lead to virya. Virya will actually strengthen our faith, because we will train our mind to be mindful. And when we are mindful, that is the third spiritual faculty. We can use it to investigate Dhamma. And when the Dhamma stand up to investigation, our faith become strengthened, unshakable. Then sati, when stabilized, it will lead to samadhi. Samadhi is the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind, that can actually be stable in the midst of life. At the moment of sense experience, there we have samadhi. The mind is collected and unwavering, even not still at the moment of sense experience. That is, when we see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel something, or recall or think of something, the mind is collected and unwavering. It will not stir and react to sense experience. It will not arise the duality of light at this time, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So this ability to be in the state of samadhi will bring forth the condition for you to stabilize your daily mindfulness. Daily mindfulness can only stabilize when you have developed the initial wisdom not to stir your mind, not to react to sense experience. Initially, you need samadhi to allow you to develop the initial wisdom so that you can see things as they are and straighten your view. That ability to see things as they are, to straighten your view, will lead you to the initial wisdom. Then later on, from there, your daily mindfulness will stabilize. Then you can have sati sampajana. Means not only you are mindful, you also have clear comprehension. That is to prevent you from deviating, from being deluded. So the four type of clear comprehension as taught by the Buddha is very important. Then with sati and samadhi and this ability to insight into phenomena, you will develop wisdom, the last spiritual faculty. And when the five spiritual faculty is developed, the mental hindrance cannot arise. They will cease to be. That's how you develop the training of the mind to transform. Then with the spiritual faculty, you can understand spiritual teaching very easily. Then you can meditate very easily. Because when the mental hindrances are no more, the spiritual faculty will take over. That's why you will be in the meditative state straight away. Technically, like I explained, you don't need to have an object of meditation or a method or a technique to anchor your mind, to train your mind. Because the spiritual faculty will enable you to have sadhā, virya, sati, mindfulness, and samadhi. So when you have this spiritual faculty, especially wisdom, your mind becomes collected, unwavering, and in the meditative state of sati. You are ever mindful, constantly meditative. That's how you become heedful. And this is what meditation is all about. So meditation is very useful when you develop the understanding of it. So spiritual faculty is the first thing that you must develop. Then faith can also be developed through understanding who the Buddha is, like what I explained in the talk, significance of the sound. Why is the Buddha so unique? Why is his birth commemorated? Why is his enlightenment very auspicious and commemorated? Why is his advice after his parinibbana, before his parinibbana, is so widely spoken and shared with cultivator and the world. So all this will help you to develop the faith. Yeah, when you understand who the Buddha is, that's why his birth become very significant. He is not only a great thing, he's a very unique thing, very rare. Because of his great virtue and wisdom, born of great period, long period of cultivation, many will cycle, almost 3¾ coming to 4 world cycle, asankhaya tapas. And because of that extensive cultivation and perfection of wisdom and virtue, which covers the 10 perfection, you can say at that time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. So to have him as our teacher, we will have a lot of gratitude towards him. We will have a lot of compassion and respect for him. So this gratitude and compassion towards such a great being will strengthen our faith and make our faith unshakable. Because to have such a great teacher is indeed very rare. So that gratitude is very strong. Then when you appreciate what he has taught us, his teaching is so unique. He not only can let you understand life, then live the noble life, he can also bring about enlightenment in the here and the now to liberate your mind so that you can be free of all suffering. So this teaching is really, really, very beautiful. Then you will cherish his teaching. You will cherish his advice. That's why this gratitude, respect, they will come naturally. Then your sadda will be very strong. That's how you develop the first spiritual faculty. Then when you see the importance of his teaching, you will arise a spiritual zeal or tenacity to go and develop this cultivation. And when you strive on faithfulness, you will develop sati, the third spiritual faculty. And when you train yourself until the sati become very stable, you will realize the fourth spiritual faculty, which is samadhi. Then when sati and samadhi stabilize, you will awaken. You will see things as they are, develop the awakening or the wisdom, the understanding. So this is how the spiritual faculty can be developed. Okay? Then we move on. The next important essential dhamma is the importance of having right view with regards to the law of karma in order to follow the advice of our Buddha, which is Dhammapada verse 183. This one we have gone through. Right? It is from this right view with regards to the law of karma, karma niyama. Because the Buddha in his teaching mentioned very clearly under the fifth contemplation, daily contemplation, he said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So when you see the importance of karma, then you will not be heedless anymore. You will strive on with heedfulness to train your mind so that you take care of karma. Our entire life depends entirely on karma, like the Buddha said. Reflect on it, contemplate the fifth daily contemplation. We are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned, supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of karma. Almost 100% of our entire life depends on karma. So what must you do? You have to take care of karma. And how do we take care of karma? We have to follow his advice, which is Dhammapada verse 183. If you want to take care of karma, you have to train your mind to be heedful, to avoid all evil, avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Then train your mind to be heedful, to cultivate Dhammapada verse 2 and the Noble Eightfold Path, perfect, so that you can develop wholesomeness. Whenever there is condition for wholesomeness, you will develop it. Then finally, you will cultivate the training of the mind to be mindful, to be in a state of samadhi and paucity, so that you can meditate to purify your mind, to awaken, to insight into the universal characteristic, thereby awakening. So all this shows the importance of this law, law of karma, pancha, one of the pancha niyama, the five universal order of nature. The first two are scientific law, uttu niyama and bija niyama. Then karma niyama is the first spiritual law and the third pancha niyama. Then after that we have the law of mind, citta niyama. Then finally is law of truth, dhamma niyama. So these three, last three spiritual law, they are very powerful, very useful. And these three constitute right view. When you understand them, you have right view. So point number two, by now it should be very clear. If you still don't quite understand, then listen to the earlier sharing, especially the significance of this that I share in a very comprehensive way. Then you will understand. So point number three is a natural consequence. You will come to know the importance of cultivating heedfulness. Because the moment you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. So no need to worry about the cultivation anymore. You only need to realize heedfulness. That's it. Then the heedful never die. And if you intend on heedfulness, you will rejoice in the rhyme of the Ari. Then those who go by that cultivation, constantly meditate, ever mindful, and you hold on to this cultivation steadfastly, you will realize the supreme born-free nirvana, enlightenment here and now. And that is Dhammapada verse 23. So importance of cultivating heedfulness is very clear. So strive on with heedfulness. And today is Vesak Day, a good reminder to cultivate that. If you do not train your mind to be heedful, means to be mindful, then stabilize it to be ever mindful, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path to become heedful, then you don't stand a chance to awaken, to develop the enlightenment. So all this is a reminder. It's like a revision for you. So the fourth point is the importance of understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha and the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, especially the second turning, which deals with the contemplative wisdom, where you inquire, contemplate, and reflect into all the Dhamma, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has proclaimed or taught. To develop the second turning wisdom, which is Chintamaya Pani. So these three turning of the Four Noble Truths will correspond to the three types of wisdom. The first turning corresponds to Sutamaya Panya, wisdom born of hearing the Sutta of discourse of the Buddha. The second turning, Chintamaya Panya, born of reflection, contemplation, and inquiry. Now the third one is third turning, Bhavanamaya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana, means the meditative discipline, the meditative training. That one is very penetrative. That type of wisdom is very penetrative. It will lead to great awakening. Okay. Then I will read on. That is to constantly investigate the Dhamma via the second turning of the Four Noble Truth, to develop your own understanding via Chintamaya Panya. Wisdom born of second turning is reflection, contemplation, and inquiry. Then the next paragraph. To develop the Chintamaya Panya, one needs to carry out constant inquiry, reflection, and contemplation on the Buddha Dharma or Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. And not just we are believing what the Buddha said and then committing them to memory. and storing this so-called Dhamma up as Dhamma knowledge. For the true Dhamma and wisdom is an understanding, and it is alive, a living Dhamma that can be experienced and understood from moment to moment. Whereas knowledge and memory are of the past, very rigid and fixed, making you very rigid in your views. So that is the big difference. Knowledge is just the facts of things. It's not wisdom. Wisdom is the component that has the word wise. You are wise. A wise person is not a knowledgeable person. A knowledgeable person may not be wise. A clever guy may not be wise. A very highly intellectual guy, very knowledgeable in many things, may not be wise. They may be foolish, but they are very knowledgeable. So always remember, wisdom is different from knowledge. So when we develop the cultivation, we have to develop the wisdom aspect to understand the essential Dhamma, the teaching. Not to commit to memory as Dhamma knowledge, then try to interpret through your thought process. Then that knowledge cannot liberate your mind, cannot free you. That's the reason why I heard a lot of Kayamita used to tell me, Theo, we study all the Dhamma, we think we know, but when we encounter problem in life, we cannot handle. We still afflicted, we still miserable. Then they always ask me why. I say because there is knowledge. So there are three levels of Dhamma, three phases of Dhamma. The Buddha called it Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching. So this learning of the teaching, you cannot learn it as an intellect thing or as a knowledge. If you learn it that way, you can never understand. Then you can never put it into cultivation or practice, which is Patipatti, the second phase of Dhamma. So the first phase of Dhamma is through constant listening to the Dhamma. Or read. Nowadays you can read. Or you can listen from audio file or video file or whatever. Then when you listen, you must try to develop the understanding of it, not commit to memory and knowledge. Otherwise you become like the typical Buddhist, who is like a parrot. You ask them a question, a Dhamma question, they like parrot answer you very fast. Like you ask them, what is the first noble truth? Oh, life is suffering. They straight away tell you. Then, what is the three evil root? Greed, hatred, and delusion. But they don't know the meaning, the deep meaning. They don't know what that thing is. They cannot explain. Because they never reflect, they never contemplate, they never inquire. Then they don't have the past cultivation to understand all these teachings. They commit to memory as knowledge. Maybe to pass exam. What is the Four Noble Truths? What they can rattle to you. Suffering, cause of arising of suffering. Then the cessation or end of suffering, then the path that leads. They can tell you. But do they understand the Four Noble Truths? Very few. Then some, they take Pali exam. They will rattle to you. Dukkha, Samudaya, Nirodha, and Magga, the Four Noble Truths. But do they really understand the deep meaning? So Pariyatti is the learning of the teaching, not committing to memory and knowledge. So when you understand, you must understand it deeply. That's why you have to constantly listen to Dhamma, the second step of Avijja Sutta. Then reflect, contemplate, and inquire. Or attend Dhamma class through Dhamma discussion. And get the understanding from people who have already developed the cultivation. The Tingzhuo, the English. Sorry, I think the video. Oh, internet is slow. Oh, that is okay. Yeah. Well, I saw the video like stop for a while. So I will continue here. Yeah. Audio will be okay. Yeah? Okay. So this aspect of the teaching is very important. Pariyatti is not about committing to memory and knowledge. No, the learning of the teaching. Through step two of Avijja Sutta, constantly listening to the Dhamma, reflect, contemplate, and inquire to develop the initial wisdom born of the first and second turning wisdom. Yeah. Then second stage is when you understand already, then you can put it into practice. You can develop the cultivation, patipatti. Yeah. So when you put the teaching into cultivation in real life, with life itself, it becomes a living Dhamma. It's no longer a knowledge, a book knowledge, or an intellectual exercise where you do all the things without much understanding. That's why people go to the extent of practicing vipassana. You know what I'm saying? Vipassana is an insight. You cannot practice vipassana. Vipassana is a training, a cultivation. Whatever that can allow you to develop the training and the cultivation to insight into the universal characteristics of nature, the three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, that is vipassana. That's why vipassana, pasana is to insight into. So it's not a practice. It's not a mechanical thing where you practice and practice and practice, then you become good at it. No. It's a cultivation. It's the training of the mind to have the ability to insight. That's why you need the silent mind. The instrument that you start with, you must develop sati, the meditative mind. If you use thought, thought base will limit you. Your thought itself is an instrument that is having its own limitation. So when you inquire, you start to understand. What you try to develop is the awakening, the enlightenment, the wisdom that the Buddha already explained under the salutation to the Dhamma. What is this Dhamma? This Dhamma is sandhittho, can be realized in the here and the now. No need to wait till death. Then this Dhamma has another very unique characteristic. It's akaliko. It's the timeless. Beyond thought, beyond time. So you use thought as an instrument, that instrument limits you. How can thought realize an enlightenment that is beyond thought? Impossible. That's why the instrument is wrong. You have to develop sati. Sati is not thought. It's an awareness before the known. That's what sati is all about. That's why for sati is life. Without sati, there is no heedfulness. Without sati, there is no training, no cultivation. We have the four foundations of mindfulness, need mindfulness. Noble Eightfold Path, the path factor, samasati also need mindfulness. Dhamma investigation also need mindfulness. The first factor, enlightenment, is also mindfulness. That's why it's all about mindfulness, not about the thought process. So this is a very important understanding. So cultivation must be developed with understanding. Then after that, then you develop the awakening. Then you will get to reap the fruit of your hard work, your cultivation. So that will lead you to the third phase of Dhamma, Pativeda. Pativeda means the third phase where you get to reap the fruit of your hard work. Means you get to live the life of an enlightened being, an Arya. And that is the most beautiful phase of your life. Because that is the enlightenment phase. Pativeda. You need to develop the training of the mind under Patipatti to awaken. Then you get to live the noble life of enlightened being under the third phase of Dhamma, which is Pativeda. And Pativeda is the most beautiful. Okay, I will read on. I worry, Rona. To develop the Chintamaya Panya, one needs to constantly inquire, oh, I have cowardice. Then after that, that might have finished it. To develop Chintamaya Panya, one needs to carry out constant inquiry, reflection, and contemplation on the Buddha Dharma, or the Noble Truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. And not just believing what the Buddha say, and then committing them to memory and storing this so-called Dhamma up as knowledge. For the true Dhamma or wisdom is an understanding and awakening, and it is a living Dhamma that can be experienced and understood from moment to moment. Means it is alive. Whereas knowledge and memory are of the past, very rigid and fixed. They will make you very rigid in the way you approach life, your views, your opinion, and your condition. Okay, then we move on to the next one. Next one is, oh, this is the Heart Sutta here. Yeah? So, page 11 to 15 of Master Xuanhua's commentary, yeah, on the Heart Sutta. Xuanhua asks, what are deviant views? So I answered, deviant views means deviated or wrong, and devious view born of delusion that can condition one's suffering and misery. So deviant means not the right view. They are deviant, devious in intention. So deviant views means deviated or wrong and devious views born of delusion. Okay? Then what is affliction? Affliction is mental suffering conditioned by the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So conditioned by one's three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. So this one normally is a combination. When you have self-delusion, then you will have greed and hatred. So sometimes delusion and greed. Sometimes delusion and the evil roots of hatred. Sometimes three altogether. Then 2.3, the unmoving mind of true suchness. This is the true mind with the enlightenment factor of samadhi and upekha or equanimity. So they call it the unmoving mind of true suchness. Means your true nature, your self nature, that is very, very bright and very stable. Means you are fully aware. For you to be mindful of it, you have to be fully aware. That's why you need to be heedful. If you are not heedful, you can't. So to do this, you must have samadhi. Then later on, of course, when you have developed the wisdom, awakening, then you have upekkha, or the seven factors of enlightenment, the last factor in enlightenment, born of wisdom. So when you have that, your mind becomes unmoving, true suchness. And throughout the day, your mind state is like that. Like after the year 1989, when the Monday night collapsed, the nature shine forth. So this unmoving mind of true suchness is always there, even until today, almost 31 years later. Now is the year 2020. So 89, 99, 209, 219 is 30 years. So 2020 is 31 years already. So this unmoving mind of true suchness is that nature within. It's always with you. The form and mind will know. Because it has realized that and it has stabilized until that has become unmoving through suchness. Okay. Then there is a question, 2.4. Why 7 years maximum or 7 days to realize the enlightenment as stated in the Four Foundation of Mindfulness? So I repeated the question. Why did the Buddha specifically state the duration of 7 years maximum or 7 days to realize the enlightenment of at least an anagami if one were to maintain the four foundations of mindfulness or the four arousing of mindfulness or the satipatthana practices as taught by him. This one is a very good question. So I will explain. The four foundations of mindfulness or the four arousing of mindfulness, they are the same. But some people like to use the word arousing. Yeah, it has more impact. Foundation also has its meaning. Yeah? The foundation means the base, like a civil engineer. When you want to build a stable building, you need a strong foundation. So you develop the four foundations as your base so that you move on from there. But the other school of practice, like this word, the arousing of the four foundations, means constantly remind you to arise the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. That arousing word also is useful. That's why I use both. The four arousing of mindfulness or the four foundation of mindfulness as taught by the Buddha is very unique. Because according to the Buddha, the four arousing of mindfulness is the only way for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for reaching the right path, for the realization of Nibbana. Because the Buddha under the four foundation of mindfulness, Satipatthana Sutta, in the opening statement he mentioned, Ekayano Bhikkhave Bhikkhu, O monk, this is the only way, Ekayano, the only way, for the purification of being, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for reaching the right path, for the realization of enlightenment, namely the four foundation of mindfulness. So this aspect is very important. Then the Buddha continued telling the bhikkhu, he said, verily, O bhikkhu, should any person maintain this four foundation of mindfulness cultivation in this manner for 7 years, for 6 years, down to 2 years, then let alone a year, then for 7 months, 2 months, 1 month, half a month, or even 1 week, then by him again, one of the two fruition is proper to be expected. Wisdom or knowledge in the here and the now, or if some form of clinging, minor conceit, mana is still present, the state of a non-returner is an anagami, the third stage of sinhood. This is the assurance given by the Buddha. So it's worthwhile to give it a try, isn't it? The sacrifice is a maximum of 7 years to cultivate the satipatthana and your future existence, should you choose to come back, is all set and taken care of. There is no more fear, worry, anxiety, sadness, sorrow, lamentation, and suffering, etc. From then onward, worth the while, isn't it? The other reason is, basing on the Avijja Sutta, cultivating the four arousing of mindfulness is step 8. And this step can only be effectively cultivated when one has completed the cultivation of step 1 to 7, especially step 4, Yoniso Manasikara, and step 5, Sati Sampajana. Then step 6, sense restraint, leading to step 7, the three way of right conduct, where you are assured of realizing at least a Sotapan or a Sakadagami, first and second stage of sinhood. So do strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless anymore. So the reason why the Satipatthana Sutta is stated that you will realize at least anagami is explained by the Avijja Sutta as what I have presented. Because there are 10 steps in the Avijja Sutta. And step 4 and 5 is the most important. Once you hit that, step 6 and 7 is a natural consequence. Then when you go through step 6, you are at least a Sotapan. Then when you hit step 7, you are at least a Sakadagami. And then if you want to really develop the anagami onward, you have to go into the four foundation of mindfulness cultivation. And that one is bhavana maya panya, the third turning wisdom, which is very penetrative. So that's the reason why once you go into the satipatthana practices or cultivation, that is step eight. The realization is at least an anagami. That is the main reason. Okay, so we finish part two. So we go on to part three. Do not believe. Part three is meditation. Do not just believe what has been spoken, but instead investigate into all of Dhamma or truth as advised by the Buddha. We are constant reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into all the Dhamma to fully understand the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths as taught by the Buddha. Once you have developed the three types of corresponding wisdom, you will know how to free your mind and later share your understanding with others so that you too can be a blessing to all. Now, this is very true. Once you have developed the ability to train your mind and develop the three types of corresponding wisdom, born of the three turning of the Four Noble Truths, you will become enlightened. Then after that, you will have the condition to share your understanding and be a blessing to all. Then I move on to the next paragraph. As thought is respond to memory, so memory is thought-based and is also of the past. Hence, when you cultivate based on memory, which is thought and knowledge-based, you cannot possibly realize a state that is beyond thought, beyond time. With knowledge, which is not wisdom, you tend to be rigid in your views, and you tend to use words, interpret them according to your views and opinion. You will also have the tendency to argue with people and perceive things as right and wrong. So this one is a repeat of the advice not to be gullible. When you do thought-based meditation, you will be caught. You will be limited by all this. Then that knowledge that you think you have, which is not wisdom, will bring forth condition for you to entangle yourself in having problems. That's why tendency to argue with people, perceiving things as right and wrong, having duality, etc. But when you have wisdom, you will not do all those things. You will know how to accord and flow and move according to condition. The four right effort within the Noble Eightfold Path. The first right effort is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech, and thought that has arisen. So that one very easy to understand. Once they have a reason, here you are not mindful, he has a reason, then you arise the right effort to abandon it. And there are five ways to do it, according to the Buddha I've gone through. If you want to know more, you will read up. Second right effort is to prevent the arising of the yet to arisen unwholesome action, speech, and thought. This one needs constant heedfulness or mindfulness and the initial wisdom. Yes. In order to be able to do the second right effort, prevent it from arising, you must have the initial wisdom. Otherwise, you can't. It will surface very fast. That's why once you have straightened your view, developed the initial wisdom, then this initial wisdom, you need so much, will come and prompt you at the moment of sense experience. Then straight away with that Dhamma understanding, the mind cannot arise anymore, the unwholesome state of mind. So the second right effort is a right effort to prevent the arising of the unwholesome action, speech, and thought need initial wisdom and mindfulness or heedfulness. Then the third right effort is to arise the right effort to cultivate the appropriate right action, right speech, and right thought that are still not in you. That one you have to cultivate and develop understanding of what constitutes right speech, right action, and right thought. Then when you understand, only you can arise the right effort to put them into practice or cultivation. These are still thought-based. All the four right efforts are still topic. Then the fourth right effort is continuously arising the right effort to refine upon the wholesomeness that is already in you until they become perfected. As again, just to maintain the wholesomeness as stated in most texts. So this part maintain, you must do away with it. Eh? You have to refine upon it and perfect it. Why must you maintain? Like the Chinese tradition or the I Ching also, they already tell you, if you maintain your wealth, the wealth cannot pass beyond three generations. Why? Well, you pass down wealth, you don't pass down wisdom or knowledge or understanding for them to generate wealth. That's why you say, don't lose. They always tell the second generation or third generation kid, you say, this money can last you for many generations to come. You only need to maintain it. But you don't teach them the understanding to develop wealth, to develop the wholesomeness, the parami for wealth to come. Then, to ask them to maintain, they cannot do it. Well, what is being passed now is wealth, not the wisdom part, the understanding part, to generate wealth. So, they have to maintain. They say, don't try to smart, don't take risks, just maintain. But these people are spoiled. Because since young, everything is provided. They don't have survival skill. They don't have the understanding to maintain well. And you just ask them to maintain, they will squander all the wealth. And they will get into big trouble. Then there is also another explanation recently by these I Ching people. He said, the way you bring up your children, if you are wealthy and successful or rich, is not to pamper your children, not to give them too much wealth. What you must pass down is the wisdom part, the understanding part. Well, whether you pass on or what, to a certain extent, it will help them, but not to pass on too much. You pass on too much, the problem is they will not be able to see the reason for working hard. And they tend to use that wealth because you give them too much. So the saying is, if they are good, they technically don't need your wealth, but they need your wealth for the initial startup. They need capital. They need certain minimum wealth to generate wealth or grow in wealth and all those things. So that one is very important, very useful. But if they are given too much, what they say is, it's like you pamper them and give them all the good things and the good life. You allow them to use up their good merits, their parami that they have. So once they use up most of it when they are young, then when they reach middle age or what, when the parents are no more, nobody to help them to guard the wealth, the asset, and the property, they will, according to law of karma, receive downfall. But no more good parami to maintain. Then this life, they are not trained properly. They pass down wealth, they didn't pass down the understanding and the wisdom to grow their wealth and other things. So that explanation, I find it quite interesting also. That's why I share it with my daughter today. I said, this is a good way so that you don't pamper them and don't actually give them all the good things in life. If they can generate them, later on they use them, they will be very happy. Yeah. But when they are young, when they lack wealth or lack certain aspect of wealth, especially money, to do certain things that they want to do when they are still young, if as parents you can support them and let them realize it, then it's good. Yeah. But don't pamper them. The word is don't pamper them. Yeah. Explain to them the meaning of wealth, money, and teach them how to generate wealth. Wealth is not just you very shrewd or very clever, or you are very skillful in your ability to generate wealth and money and other things. Because there is a spiritual aspect to wealth generation. You don't have the parami, you don't have merits, especially generosity, merits, and parami. Somehow wealth will not come to you. Even if it comes to you, you will lose it. Because most people, before they know the Dhamma, they will make a lot of mistakes in life. They are most of the time heedless. And because of that, they have mixed type of karma. Sometimes they do certain wholesomeness, goodness, that they can like become very lucky. They strike it, maybe strike lottery, or successful in certain venture and business. But then because of their negativity or heedless behavior in the past, the karmic conditioning come. Once the condition arises, like economic crisis or certain type of COVID-19 crisis, it will hit them and they will lose them. So all this need understanding. So in order to be successful in life, you need both the spiritual understanding and the mundane aspect of understanding. Because the mundane one has its mundane application. Because we live in a society where the mundane world has its own civilization's instrument and product. Nowadays, we have a lot of instrument and product for investment, wealth generation, business, especially the IT age, where we have a lot of new field, AI and all those things. So the way people become successful and wealthy is different from the olden days because of the advance of IT, internet technology and all those things. So the early years, they started off with the agricultural revolution. So those who invest in plantation, agriculture, they tend to be successful. Then the world evolved and developed the second revolution, which is called industrial revolution. So the industry came in, all these people become wealthy, but they pollute the world. They create a lot of problems too. Then after the industrial revolution, which helped them to solve the job problem and all those traditional business problems, then information technology come, internet technology come, IT come. Then you see the advent of IT, AI, internet, and it revolutionized the way society do things, human behavior. Like now, after COVID-19, we were told life will not go back to normal like before. It's like you have to go through a new normal, a new way of living life, which is going to be a new type of normal life. And all these are evolving for the better. But what I'm trying to advise you is, without the spiritual aspect to complement the mundane aspect, so you can be successful in life through achieving all the mundane aspect of life, like what I have shared with you all before in a few of my Dhamma sharing. Understanding life, its purpose and meaning. So mundane success, we can equate it to like you are born into a reasonable family. Then when you grew up as a child, you have good childhood life, relatively good. Then you are good in your academic field or the field that you have passion for. Then you excel in your academic career. So that is mundane success. Means you are very intellectual. You are very successful in your ability to study. That's why you have good grades in school, in university. Then after you graduate, you have good career life. You become very successful. Then career success come along. Followed by, normally when you are successful in your career, you will also be successful in your financial. So financial success will follow. So these three are relatively easy to achieve nowadays. Most kids, most younger generation people are able to have these three. Academic success, nowadays 3A a lot. Then career success, financial freedom. Career, I think quite a lot of people make it too. Then financial also relatively quite a lot. But the fourth one is not so easy. Family unit success means family harmony, a good family unit with a lot of harmony, understanding, love, compassion. And most people cannot achieve that. That is still mundane. The ability to have a family unit that is full of understanding, harmony, love, and compassion, and able to live life beautifully is very rare. And this family unit thing, you need wisdom to, you need a spiritual aspect of understanding to complement it. That's why the last success, which is beyond the mundane, is spiritual success. And you can reach the pinnacle of all this success, you will be beautiful. And like the book that I printed for sharing, the seminar book, there was a seminar in Bangkok, I think, in the year 2013, August. I was invited to this international conference or seminar of World Buddhist University and World Fellowship of Buddhists, together with the I think World Mindfulness Center, I don't know why, in Thailand, Bangkok, where I delivered this talk, Success in Life, Following the Dhamma Way. Inside there, I did a lot of sharing, which is very good. You should download it from the website, www.theo.com, and read it. It will help you to develop the understanding. And inside there also, I mentioned about all this success and how it can be done, how my nature has the condition to reach the pinnacle of all of them. So all these are very useful. Okay, I have to rush through a bit. Where were we? Part 3, yeah? Finish already, part 3. Oh, yeah, finish. The fourth right effort. Ah, good. Just nice. So I will end. So the fourth right effort also finish. So all this is very useful. So tonight at least we covered the whole chapter, lesson 10. Now we will open up for question or reporting of meditation. Okay, I have a drink. You all, whoever who wants to ask question or give any sharing or reporting of meditation, you can just come in on your speaker, then just prop in. Or with your hand. My daughter say we are lucky today. We got lesson 10, just a few pages in. But next week one, lesson 11, is almost 2 or 3 times the length. So today, because of condition, we started late, half an hour late. Then my son decided to come over for dinner. And he booked dinner. And the dinner was booked quite late, delivered to our place. And I think we only started taking dinner 7:45. That's why I sent out the notice, try to delay today's session. We delay it by half an hour. Okay, anybody? Report meditation or ask question? Now is the time, huh? Anybody? Or anything you want to clarify about today's sharing? Huh? Nobody? We have 28 of us and yet nobody. It's everything understood, huh? Which is good news. Okay, if you don't have, then what do you want me to do? There are some notes prepared by Sui. You all try to go through. Maybe she will go and polish it up before he sent out. No, retype only, no problem. Never mind. After you go through, I think by now you will know how to edit and improve it. Because what I have shared is the common essential Dhamma. This one spelling is DD, Sada DD. Okay. These short notes that Sui make could be quite useful because these are like pointers that can help you also. So let her go through and polish it up later, okay? What is it? No, never mind. Later on, you can edit it. Okay, if nobody, then we will do the sharing of merits and transfer of merit first. Because it's going to be 10:25. So let us recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we have developed. And we will share these merits with all beings. Starting with the devas. Akka, Satta, Chir, Bumata, Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasa Sana Itta Watta Jamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita Hontunya Tayo Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita hontunya teyo, idang menya tinang hotu, sukita hontunya teyo, devo wasatu kalena, sasu sampati hetu cha, vito bawatu loko cha, raja bawatu dhammiko, imina punyang kamina, mame bala samagamo, Satang samagamo otu yawa nirvana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, you can pay respect to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. And we end. Okay, we will end the recording first.